Hi. Here's Masechet Kinim, second parak, fourth Mishnah, and thereafter a brief review of halacha logic that we've seen up to here. Okay. Fourth Mishnah of the second parak is actually very, very short and perhaps simple. This fourth Mishnah is sort of a halacha logic note to the last part that we saw in the third Mishnah of the second parak. So it's so short. First, let me read it, and then we'll explain it. It says simply, "Ken stuma v'ken mefureshes, harach min hastuma the mefureshes shikach zuk l'sheni, chazar o sheparach min hamefureshes rishon hare kulan yamutu." So we have two nests.
Right.
We have a ken stuma. That's two birds. Half of them, one of them has to get used to the chatas, and one is an ola, and they're entangled, and we haven't decided what's. And we have a ken mefureshes, where somebody somehow put a chatas, something that has to be a chatas, and something that has to be an ola, together in the same nest. Okay? So, parach min ha stuma the mefureshes. So now I have two boxes. Okay? Now, in this one, I don't know, I can't really use any of them, as we saw in the second mission of the first parak. Chatat that goes into an older chatat, even one in 10,000, yamutu kulam, you can't use any of them. So now I have something that maybe I could have used, but since any bird that I take out of here could be something I have to use as a chatas or could be something I use as an ola, I can't use any of them. But since I'm not going to use any of them, I can go and take a new bird here. Because even he has no restriction. I'm not worried that his companion is going to be used as a chatas or an ola. His companion is not going to be used. So I can still use him as a chatas and ola and use him as the entangled one. If he's a chatas, he's an ola, he's an ola, he's a chatas. Okay, now, next step, something flies back here. So what does this whole thing look like? I've got three birds here. Let me make it even clearer, maybe. I've got three birds here. And I've got two birds here. And I don't know, is this the original chatas and ola? Or is this a chatas and the one that flew in? Or is this an ola and the one that flew in? And this one that flew back, I don't know if it's the original mate, or it has to be a ola, or it has to be a chatas. So when I take one bird out of here, it might be that bird which has to be a chatas or has to be an ola, so I can't use any of these. Okay? It's pretty straightforward. Okay. So what's the difference between the... Why do we have this change of language from ken stuma to ken mefureshes? Why don't they just call them ken chova? Okay? Or why don't they just call mefureshes mesis? Okay? Because according to the second mission of the first parak, when I have a chatas mixed in with an ola, which is what I originally had here, they should all be left to die. Okay? So, mesis basically is I could have any number of birds, some of which should have been used as chatas and some of them should have been used as ola, and I don't know who's who. Mefureshes is dafka, half of them should have been used as chatas and half of them should have been used as ola. So mefureshes is a slightly special case of mesis. And therefore, somebody might say, well, maybe just like I did in the Yeshomrim of the third mission of this parak, there's some way that I can somehow use some of these because the Yesh or Meim assumes some bidyevid conditions about Mesas. Okay? We said there, Hamishiva, Hashishiva, Enhem Klum, Hashvit Yesh the Arba, Vyesh Omrim, and that's that last part, Hashvit Lo of Sida Klum. But Im Parachmi Ben Hamesus the Klubim, Hare Kum Lamutu. But maybe the Im Parach Ben Hamifores isn't the kulam hare kulam yimutu. Maybe if you substituted mifareshes for mesas, you'd get a different result. Because mifareshes really has some slightly different conditions in it than all the different possible mesas. So here in 2.4, in the fourth mishnah of the second parak, not like the second mishnah of the second parak, since Mephoratius is not simply two puzzle birds, like the groups 1 through 6 of the 7 women of the third Mishnah of the second parag, after they fly back and forth, HaMephoratius is Mesas, except HaMephoratius includes this entanglement condition that if one gets used as Chatas and one gets used as Ola, and they've been specified. Also, this Mishnah if it wasn't given to us, if this Mishnah was missing, because you'd say it's obvious, then somebody might in the future say, if you go according to the previous Yesh Omrim, then there's some way to use some of the birds. Okay, so again, this Mishnah was Ken Stuma v'ken Mephoratius, Parachman Hastuma l'Mephoratius. I have a Ken Stuma and I have a Ken Mephoratius. Something flies from the Stuma to the Mephoratius. Yikach Zug l'Sheni, you take a new bird for the remaining bird in the Stuma because there's no restriction on its companion. Chazar, if it goes back, or if initially, Shaparachman HaMephoratius Rishon, that's one of the for sure has to be a chatas or for sure has to be an ola, originally flies into the stuma, hare kulam yamutu, hare, I declare them that all of them have the status of mesas. Now let's do just a short review of the things that we've had up till here in the Masechet Kinim, so that we're going to need them to appreciate a very long but very interesting fifth mission of the second parag. Okay. And some of the halachologicals that we've seen up to here are the definition of individuals, of chatas and ola, how do you use them, a template definition of using what you have to accomplish what you need to accomplish, a definition of groups, you have an entanglement condition in a group called a chova, where half of them has to be used as chatas and half of them has to be used as ola, you have a residual fulfillment condition in a neder, that if you made the neder and somehow it died or was stolen, you still have to bring the olas of the neder. And you have a no residual fulfillment condition in the nedava. I said I want to do something with these, and those are die or stolen, I can't do it, I'm finished. It's interesting to note that pshat, like definitions, answers two questions. What is it, the word or words, and why is it here? For the first mishnah of the first parak, these are the simplest rules, and they let us learn sharp, clear-cut boundary halakha logic, both to see how to solve problems, notice before any action occurs, which is what happened in the first and second parak, and to see how to solve problems that are noticed after something is actually done on the Mizbeach, which is what we'll see in the third parak. Again, pshat answers two questions. What is it, the word or words, and why are this word or words here? By the way, certainly in Mishnah, it always comes to teach us something. So if it looks like to you that it's obvious or easy, then you need to try to go one step further, as we're about to see all over the place in the third parak. For example, in Mishnah, we should always try to notice any change of words and why. Likewise, to notice where a phrase is located, because it's not just to mention it, it's to explain something, as we saw in the Yesh Omrim. Also, if we think about the pshat of action instead of the pshat of texts, like Nedava, when we see something and notice it's out of place, then we should move it to its proper place. You're walking at home, you see a toy on the floor, you recognize it's a toy and that's not where it's supposed to be, so harezu, inside of yourself, Yekilu, pick it up and move it and try to put it where it's supposed to be. However, like a neder, again in the world of action, but internally, no halachic declaration. If I see something that I can't move, then I should include it in my plans to be moved. So I see something that needs fixing, and I say, oh, I should remember to call the plumber or the electrician or to put this somewhere else or get someone to help move it. Simply stated, even the ways that we learn Torah can positively reflect on the ways we conduct ourselves in ordinary action. The remainder of the first parak brings us cases of complete mixing. All of them noticed before any action was taken, before anything was brought to the Mizbeach. And at the end of the second mission in the first parak, we see a change of words where it says Nadava, which, by the way, all Nadava is Ola, so we again ask why there's the change of words. In the third mission of the first parak, we introduced a sharp boundary condition for halacha logic education in the form of Bemed Devorim Omerim, which will apply again to the entire third parak. In the fourth mission of the first parak, we see an interesting second half where Rabbi Yossi reflexively observes that since all cases of the first parak allow as many birds as possible to use without violating the respective entanglement conditions, then we can apply this back upon women to allow initial condition partnerships and not to consider these as some mixing violation of entanglement. Now, in the second paragraph that we've been doing, we consider a similar class of halacha logic, specifically for cases of partial mixing, not complete mixing that we had in the first paragraph. And we notice this again, like the first paragraph, before any action is taken, before anything is brought to the Mizbeach. In the first mishnah of the second parak, like the first and second mishnah of the first parak, we're given definitions and basic halacha logic for partial mixing. In the second mishnah of the second parak, it reminds us that here too, halacha lets us use as many birds to be used as possible without violating any respective entanglement condition. So here in the second mishnah of the second parak, that means that we could go back and use the halacha logic that we had in the third mishnah of the first parak, which would otherwise seem to be overriding the halacha of the first mishnah of the second parak. Accordingly, we are to understand that halacha is a system of logic which can sort of override authority. Since the first mishnah of the second parak is not the authority, it's the best practices logic, except where there's a better best practices logic. Okay? The third mishnah, which was the seven women of this second parak, reinforces the observation of the first half of that the first half of a mishnah should be straightforward and simple to understand, while the second half of a mishnah shows some novel way of considering the situation presented in the first half. Here in this third mishnah of the second parak, the second half, we have an example of not just understanding what words mean, but also coming to recognize why they're located in that place. Specifically, as mentioned before, for the phrase, Im parach mi ben hametech lekulam, hare kulam yamutu. Who are these kulam? They're the ones that would have been allowed in the second women. And it's not, as we saw just now, V'im parach mi ben ha-miforeshes dekulam harei kulam yamutu. That's an additional piece of logic. If anything in this brief review is not clear, then please go back to the referenced previous mishnahs in order to be able to appreciate the fifth mishnah of the second parak, and more particularly the entire third parak of Masechet Kinim. Thank you.